You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Michael Grothy.
He's sitting over there. He's looking at us. He's giving us the spooky eye.
Ben's not here. This isn't Ben. This is
an imposter. You guys have seen a musical chairs of guests on this show recently,
yeah.
And we're all here. We're back with the A squad, varsity team. We're back.
This is Ben Bateman. I don't know if you guys didn't know that.
Yeah.
So what it is that, you know, what we're trying to do is commit to you guys to try and make sure that we're releasing content regularly. And to do that, we're going to need to be bringing on guest hosts. And there may be times in the world where there are two guest hosts, but normally it'll just be one and together, or one of us and some other person. For instance, it looks like, based on scheduling, that this episode is our part one of our two-part return to Ravnica, Guilds of Ravnica.
Guilds of Ravnica.
We're going to do the part one with the two of us, but then probably the next week, the second episode, we'll have me and Michael. So
we're going to try our
say hi, Michael,
to make it work. He's here. Michael's here. So, a lot of things have been going on. Let's take a quick second to catch everybody up on the things that have been happening in the world of Alex and Ben.
I'm married.
You're married. Look at that.
Look at that ring.
You got a ring on your hand.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
I liked it, and then she put a ring on it.
Yeah. Nice. It's a pretty ring.
Thank you. It's white gold.
It's classy and elegant. Can you explain to me what white gold is? People say that, and it sounds like really cool, like white chocolate when I was growing up. It's like, oh, it's different.
What is
white gold?
Gold that is silvery looking.
Is white gold just what you call yourself?
That is, yeah. That would be weird. No, but it's the least expensive possible ring that from the people that we bought our rings from, because the chances of me losing this within the next 365 days is high. So
wait, why is it that the case? And I don't know. So you get a cheap ring in case you lose it? That's a thing people do, or just an Alex Kessler thing?
That's an Alex Kessler thing.
Aha, I see.
Yeah. So like the other ones that are cool, like there's titanium rings, but they like there's surgical issues because not every hospital has the equipment needed to be able to cut a titanium ring, so they're very durable, and if you lose them, they're not that expensive, but they can like permanently ruin your finger.
So Alex is married. I've been manning the ship back here in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a good ship.
So here are the things. Here are the big highlights. Because, guys, quickly, today is the set review for Guilds of Ravnica. Alex mentioned we have a lot of Guilds of Ravnica cards to talk about. It's a long episode. We are going to try to cover as many of the relevant cards as possible. And we've talked loosely about some of them already, but there's a lot of cool ones to talk about. Battle Boss is funded. I mean, I think it happened since you were here last.
No, I was also gone. So I got married.
Yeah.
Then we went on our honeymoon-y thing. And then during that period, Battle Boss is funded. So
the Kickstarter.
Happened. Yeah.
So
for
you
all
guys
those people, thanks everyone for participating, donating, sharing, liking, all the things that you guys did. Without the Masters of Modern fans, it definitely wouldn't have happened. So we definitely appreciate it. And super exciting. You will be able to say, if you missed it, there will be a thing called a backer kit, which is after the Kickstarter, there we kind of open up a store that lets people that backed it kind of put in the information they need to be able to get it, or if they want specific things, and then also allows people that didn't have a chance to jump on board to jump on board.
Yeah, it's quite the wild ride talking about Battle Bosses in the first place, testing it here in the office for a year and a half or something like
that,
to actually showing people at Gen Con and demoing it at Magic conventions, and then now the game is going to be in your hands within a year. It's actually going to be out there. We'll have physical copies that are in production. It'll be very, very cool. We can play with people. So thanks to everybody. It's been a total blast. Without further ado, we will do more shout-outs later. Let's get into the episode. There's a lot to talk about, and I think it's a fun episode.
So I guess the first thing, and I know you and Ruben did some of this, so if we're being repetitive, Ben, please tell me. But I wanted to start saying, how do you feel about each of the guilds? And which ones are you most excited about? Which ones do you think kind of didn't do what you wanted to do with them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, yeah, so one of the big things I've said a lot recently is that I do think, and I know I said this on an episode you were here for, I think that Ravnica as a set is the best identity of every two-color combination. So it's the best representation that Wizards of the Coast is able to give us, because they like to vary it up, right? If like if is it's going to be is it here, they don't want blue red cards in another guild to necessarily feel like is it. They want it to feel like blue red, but not specifically is it.
Sure.
And I think because they succeeded so well with that initial Ravnica set, when they go back here to Ravnica, they are able to do the best job.
Well, I think it's evolved that way. Because I know when the first set out, you know, they were in a position where the standard environment of the year before that for blue-white, for instance, was too controlly to the point where it was unfun because of Kamigawa block and gifts ungiven. So they, like, had to make sure that blue-white in Ravnica in the first set was not... was like a different play style, but then once we got back to it and returned to Ravnica, they fixed that. Boros is another guild that kind of did that as well, where in the first one their mechanic wasn't very Borosy. It was a weird how many colors are in your card bonus, and so then they fixed that with Battalion, and now they fixed it with Mentor. And Mentor, I think, is a really cool mechanic.
I agree. I like Mentor a lot. So I mean, so the answer to the question is that I think the five we've seen here, at least in this set, are all pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm a little underwhelmed by my favorite guild, which is it?
Yep.
It's like every once in a while you'll see them just do this thing where you feel like what they've done is they've taken all the concepts you really like and they've either slightly overcomplicated them to make the too many steps to get the payoff you want, or just weakened them. And that's the is it to me feels kind of like that here.
I would say is it is the biggest letdown to me as well, partly because walking in, I even like the mechanic they came up for. Is it
Jumpstart's pretty cool? Yeah.
From a rule stack perspective, but none of the cards they printed with Jumpstart are super exciting. You know, there's not a lot of like things I want to do with the cards, and especially after the last Ravnica set where Izzet was around, you know, we got a lot of really powerful Izzet cards out of that set. So I think there's waxing and waning. Golgari just consistently is the best and most powerful guild every return to Ravnica. Like in the original Ravnica, they had Dredge. In second Ravnica, they had Abrupt Decay and Deathrite Shaman. And this one, they have.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's because the graveyard and powerful creatures combined is such a good, like, difficult to consistently interact with thing? So when you just push that every time, you're going to find enough things. The density is just very high.
Yeah, like, well, I think green and black are the second and third, or tied for second, most powerful colors in general, and they combined also cover the things that they are specifically bad at. So you know, green can't kill creatures, black can kill creatures. Black can't kill enchantments and artifacts, green can do that. So together, they're able to kill anything they want to kill.
It's almost, I think what it feels like is that if you think about interacting in Magic, it's like green-white, great. But green-white is basically creatures. It's some version of creatures and like enchantment-based removal.
And Wizards has said multiple times that if there were only four colors, they would get rid of one either green or white and combine them into one color effect. Like you would get rid of the card drawing out of green and then they'd be the same thing.
And it's like something about disruption paired with utilizing graveyard as a resource and also fatty creatures. Mm-hmm. It's like it's too hard just generically to interact with both things at the same time. Right. So it just feels like it gets you.
Well, it's interesting because I would say that the two most powerful color combos in Magic, or at least in Modern, are blue red and black green. And in Return to Ravnica, both of those kind of got a lot of different tools for both of them. In this set, it feels like black green got the majority of it, where other combos that normally aren't that powerful have gotten some cool cards that we'll be going over.
So I think my answer to your question again is that I think it's pretty good. It's a little bit of a letdown. Golgari's nuts. We got the second best card in the whole set, I think, and it's a green white card, which is pretty cool.
There's some other ones that we'll talk about, but I do think it. Yeah, it's
the card's insane.
And then there's a third. I think Dimir though is the set. Like I think Dimir in the last two Ravnica blocks was the least serviced. Probably because in the first one I love Transmute, but that card that'll never be printed again, and it was kind of like a as a mechanic did okay. I greatly disliked Cypher.
But the Cypher does have, I've talked about it on here before, Cypher has one card that eventually someone's going to find a way to break, and that's Hidden Strings.
Well, but like, so does, like, Haunt is maybe one of the worst Ravnica mechanics in the history of Ravnica,
so
but it has Pontiff. Like, there will be good cards with mechanics.
Do you think in 10 seconds you could explain how Haunt works to me?
When you play a thing, well, it depends. Is it a spell or a creature?
you get my joke.
Because there's two mechanics there. Because like with creatures, it's when you cast it, then you put this onto a creature, and then when that creature dies, you get it. When if it's a creature, when it dies, you then haunt a creature, and then when that creature dies, you get it.
It's one of the most unnecessarily complicated.
There's like
mechanics
a weird
ever.
Morbid trigger attached to.
So, I've always felt that Hidden Strings, because of the way that it interacts with permanents, right? So it's like it's two mana to basically get some kind of tempo slash mana advantage if you play it correctly. And I've never seen a deck in Modern take advantage of it properly, but because it only costs two, you can play it and then trigger it again. Like you're...
Well, but moving on, Surveil is just the
Surveil's
best.
Really good. Yeah, Surveil, I love Surveil. Surveil is like a perfectly designed mechanic for Dimir. It feels right. Exactly
it
right.
Feels, it feels like Dimir. It mills. It makes it so you're getting the right cards at the right time. And it is just really good. I mean, Scry's great, and this is not strictly better than Scry, but it's close.
So really quickly, my last quick shout-out before we get into the set is we have a Patreon, guys. Patreon.com/... the MMCast. We promote it every week. It's the thing right now that is allowing us to continue to grow this show. You guys know that we've gone to video. We have this big fancy light that's on us right now. We have this camera we got. We're trying to do more. Stream for you guys. Increase numbers of shows. We've been giving away packs. Those packs were bought with Patreon money. That's stuff we're doing. Yeah. So we're trying to do all of that. So
all of the small incremental upgrades you keep seeing us do has only happened because of it, and there are more that we'd like to do. So with your guys' help, you help make the show happen. You help make the show be better than it should be, and we can't appreciate it any more than we do.
Absolutely. So let's start. What's the first card?
So the first card, and I'm going to try holding my phone up with the card up because I know people on the video streams are looking for that. But the first card is Amara, Soul of the Accord, green-white legend creature elf cleric. It is a 2/2 for two. When Amara, Soul of Accord becomes tapped, create a 1/1 white soldier creature token with lifelink.
There you go. See, should I try to zoom in on it? Would that be smart? Or we're not going to do that for every single one.
So why don't we just talk?
Great. Amara, Soul of the Accord. All right, show it to me now, because I was listening and looking at camera. Okay, great. this card, the populate one. Whenever it taps.
It's not populate. Whenever it gets tapped, it makes a 1/1 white. So, like, from a base level, it fits into every Hate Bear strategy that's ever existed. It's really good with Convoke because you tap it to make 1/1s while you're casting a Convoke spell. You don't even have to attack with her. But in general, just when you're being aggressive, every time you attack, you get a 1/1 is good.
Yeah. I mean, Brimaz is a card that in any time I've ever played in Standard with that card, I've played in Eternal formats like Highlander with that card. Mm-hmm. I'm always kind of impressed by just like how consistently good it is that every activation gets you a creature. And this being a bear is good. From a Modern perspective, I don't know that there's a deck that will find a way to utilize this like crazy well. What about from a Commander perspective?
From a Commander perspective, this is a Commander that's available. I do think that in Modern, I would be more... I think this has the ability to find homes. It's an elf. It has a lot of power for what it's doing. Like you're getting three power, a 3/3 for three for two, or sorry, a 3/3 for two. And then the fact that they're lifelinking tokens also is something that not to be overlooked.
It interacts nicely with Heritage Druid. That's one of the things that I think is good about this card. It's a little expensive for what those decks are doing, but I mean,
not really a two drop that like.
Well, so for instance, the two drop Dwinin's Elite gets you I believe Dwinin's Elite, if I'm not mistaken, Michael, you can correct me on this, is a 2/2 for two that gets you a 1/1 if you have another elf, right?
Great.
So if Dwinin's Elite wanted to replace one copy or play like this as a fifth copy of Dwinin's Elite because of the way that it interacts with Heritage Druid,
sure. That's
interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's repeatable. That's like where I could see, but then you have to go into white, so I'm not totally sure.
Yeah, no, I think it's just it has different places it could be. It's not on the top end. These are not in order. We're just talking about cards in order of where they were.
Cool card, though.
Screenshots of them. Next, we have Niv-Mizzet Perrin. Blue, red, legendary creature, dragon wizard. This spell can't be countered. It is a 5/5, has flying, and whenever you draw a card, Niv-Mizzet deals one damage to any target. Whenever a player casts an instant or sorcery spell, you draw a card.
Looks like this card's sweet. So there's a couple that we have talked about a little bit. This is one of the ones on previous episodes we touched on because I'm a big Niv-Mizzet fan.
Okay.
This is the third Niv-Mizzet. I think it's safe to say from a power level perspective, this is the most powerful Niv-Mizzet so far.
It's the one that does the most with the most stuff. Like, I think the first one is, like, has the cleanest combo, though this combos with it just as well for the most part. Like, if you have a curiosity on this and you cast any sorcery and instant spell goes off versus the other Niv-Mizzet where you just need a curiosity and to tap him. The difference here is that just any spells you cast. Like, this is a sideboard card out of Storm so that you can be able to do something if they have a Rest in Peace in play or other Graveyard Hate is something that I was really looking at it for. And then just other spell effects like that.
I don't think that we'll ever see the Curiosity, Keen Sense,
combo,
deck in Modern because I think it's a little too expensive to play an aura on a legendary creature, 6-drop. But I can say that the way that this one interacts, being that you could cast the Curiosity, Pact of Negation to protect it, and win on the Pact, is pretty good.
Yeah.
The fact that, like, that's a thing, you're going to
be... Well, no, because Curiosity wouldn't... If I'm killing the Mizzet in that
in response,
I would be in response to the curiosity, yeah. And so then it doesn't really work that way. But yeah, I mean, I think it's. I'm also just in general interested in looking at different alternate wind conditions for Storm that aren't Grapeshot, because I do think that in the long run, for the health of Modern, Grapeshot is really a card that could probably go away, and I think the world would be a better place. There are other cards that I think are banned because that card exists. And the more alternative win conditions to Grapeshot that exist in Modern, the better for Storm to be able to survive that banning, which means that's a banning that can happen. Because I don't think they want to kill the deck, but I think stuff like Aetherwax Reservoir and Dragonstorm and this, and there's another card that we have here that also does something similar is good. Next card is Connive and Concoct. Connive is
there's nothing more frustrating than not having screen lock on when you're trying to look at the sideways cards on your phone. I have to tell you guys the number of times I've tried to read the text and just keep having to turn it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I'm locking my screen. Connive is 2 black-blue hybrid, so 4 mana total. Gain control of target creature with power 2 or less. And then Concoct is 3 blue-black. Surveil 3, then return a creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. This is a card that, you know, worse version or better versions have seen play. There's, you know, the Threads of Disloyalty is obviously the most relevant here. The difference here between those cards is the back end is a useful enough effect, like a 5-mana reanimate spell with Surveil attached is really good. And so is it worth playing one more mana to be able to steal their 2-drops or their creatures with power 2 or less for the ability to at late game have a much better spell?
In Modern, no.
Okay.
In this card's fine. Like, I totally think it's fun, and I could see myself playing this. Like, I think this card is more of an EDH card than anything else.
Would you play Control Magic in Commander? Or in Modern? Sorry.
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe. Power 2 or less is pretty restrictive, though. I mean, you're not stealing probably a Goyf or an Angler or a Death Shadow or, like,
but you can get things that
are... You can get, like, a Pyromancer. You can steal a Snapcaster, I guess. But, like, most of the most played creatures that have 2 or less, you don't really want to spend 4 mana to take.
Sure.
It's a bad trade.
Okay. And then you don't think the backing up of Convoke on the other end helps?
Don't think that there's not a lot of decks in Modern that want to spend 5 to reanimate a creature.
Okay.
Like, there's better reanimate effects that you don't want to rely on Surveil to get your thing in your yard.
Fair. Next, we got Discovery and Dispersal, the other blue-black, the other Dimir double card. It is Discovery is 1 black, 1 and then blue-black. Surveil 2, then draw card. And then Dispersal is 3 blue-black. Each opponent returns a non-land permanent they control with the highest converted mana cost among permanents they control to its owner's hand, then discards a card. The key to this card is that this doesn't get cascaded into out of Living End decks. That's where most people are paying attention to it.
Oh, that's pretty interesting.
So you can play a 2-mana card filtering card in a deck that does need it because you're looking for those cascade spells, but then you won't hit it later in the game when you're cascading getting into Living End.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that is a rules change. So it used to not work that way. It used to be that you would cascade into it and you would just get like Dispersal for cheaper. That's how Boom Bust used to work. When they did the rules change, you now get to play this card in something like Living End and not have to worry about cascading into it. So you get both effects. And once in a while, you'll cast Dispersal, even though it's pretty mediocre.
I am of the mind that any time that a deck like that gets a tool, like a rare tool like this, it's relevant. Like that's like pretty hard to come up with things that like a deck like Living End can play. So I do expect now people will play with it. Will it be good enough to actually last? I mean, don't know.
2-mana is 2-mana Preordain and technically better than Preordain.
And that deck definitely better.
Worth playing? Yes, I think it. I mean, like, in a deck that's looking for combo pieces, I think that's relevant. Like, plus, it puts things like the other fact is Living End wants to put stuff in your graveyard. So, like, say you Surveil and there's just 2 cycle creatures on top, you just dump them into your graveyard.
At the bare minimum, if you cycle a creature on turn 1, you put a Caribit in your yard. On turn 2, you play this, you put another creature in your yard, you get your Demonic Dread, or you don't. You like put like
just 2 creatures in your yard, or put a creature
you
in your
dump
yard
a land,
get a land.
Dump a land and a creature in your yard, and then turn 3. You draw your Demonic Dread, like, on turn 3, getting 10 power, if that's all you're getting, is fine.
It's, like, right on curve. Like, if it didn't cycle, like, because it's not a creature, you know, but the fact that it surveils instead of scries allows you to put creatures on top of your deck like you can even get above than you normally would if you were cycling cards, right? So I think it does a lot for what the deck wants to be doing. And then once in a while, you're just like, oh, you have one creature in play, and it's like, and you have zero cards in hand, and I'm just gonna get you. Like that will happen if you play this card at some point. Next card is March of the Multitudes. It's X green, white, white, Kinvoke, instant. Create X11 white soldier creature tokens with lifelink.
It's just creature Sphinx's Rev.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's kind of like if Sphinx's Rev and Secure the Wastes had a child together.
So this is like people have been saying, right? This is the spell that completes the cycle because green, white didn't get one.
So in the original Ravnica block, in the original Return to Ravnica block, Return to Ravnica, each of the five guilds other than Selesnya had a X spell mythic that all did X something. It was red black discarded their hand
Rakdos
to damage,
return,
Rakdos Return, Sphinx's Revelation.
You had Sphinx's Rev, Rakdos Return,
Epic Experiment. We did Selesnya was the one that didn't. Which one?
Red Green.
Red Green was not that set. What was the other set?
Red White. Aurelia's Fury?
Nope. That was in the next set. So on top of that, the next set, all five guilds, Dimir, why Michael? What?
Gaze of Granite.
Was a mythic. So yeah. But that was the one that was a mythic. It was rare.
And that's the one that was like the least played, I think.
Well, it was just destroy all permanents,
X converted mana
cost. Yeah, it's pernicious seed for X. But that probably could have been mythic. If they had known that this was a cycle they were doing, it would have been. But the next set all had five X spells as well. So they each guild other than Selesnya had X spell rares and mythics. This now completes that set. So
it's funny that years later, we've talked about uncompleted cycles before. Back in one of the old episodes we did, like an old audio episode from like 2 years ago,
right?
We had a whole episode on uncompleted cycles, and this particular card
did come up.
Was one of the cycle cards we talked about that needed to be completed. So I think that's funny.
And this card's good. I mean, part of that is also just like you can tap creatures when you cast it, so you can bump up how many creatures you're getting. Lifelink is really good on this effect because you get to worst case scenario use it as a fog that gains you life. And so it does have Sphinx's Rev-like activations. And then Secure the Wastes is a good card. Secure the Wastes is possibly better because you get two extra creatures out of it for the same cost, but then you can't convoke them, so it doesn't chain very well. Because the other half, if you have two of these in your hand, end of your opponent's turn, cast this for six, so you get 3 1/1s, and the next turn you can cast it for 9, getting 6 1/1s.
We've definitely seen how powerful Secure the Wastes has been.
Yeah.
It was a definitive standard card. Wasn't Secure
in
Standard?
It's a card. What? It's one of the blue-white control
finishers.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll play one of, but like in Standard, wasn't Secure like the best deck for a while? Wasn't that like a thing?
No, that was Rally the Pet.
No.
Secure the Waste was a, Michael, it was a card that's
right
out play.
Standard.
I did play it in Standard, but
I don't think it was the
four color Secure was like a thing people were doing a couple years ago.
Yeah, you're thinking of Rally.
Rally the.
That's animate a bunch of things.
Rally the Ancestors. You're right.
That was
right.
Like the best deck.
Yeah,
at one point, not Secure the Waste.
I was mixing it up.
Yeah. Secure the Waste was played though, in Standard, and it sees play in Modern. Next, we got Mnemonic Betrayal. Blue black, colorless, exile. It's a sorcery. Exile all cards from all opponents' graveyards. You may cast those cards this turn, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any type to cast those spells. At the beginning of the next end step, if any of those cards remain exiled, return them to your owner's graveyards. Exile Mnemonic Betrayal.
Upfront cost is 3.
Yep. It's
you
a sorcery.
You can spend mana as though it were any color to cast them.
Yep.
Only spells. You don't get their lands.
Correct.
But it's any spells.
And it exiles the graveyards.
So,
or do you only exile cards? There's a lot of text. You exile all graveyards. So worst case scenario, this is a blue-black way to remove everyone's graveyards.
Until end of turn.
No, right? The graveyards don't go back.
Yes, they do.
Oh, they do? Oh, never mind.
So, I mean, it's interesting. Like, there are certain matchups where I could think this might be good. Like, if you're in a blue... If you were playing a blue-black control deck and you ended up going against some sort of quick cycle, like the old Death Shadows decks or the ones that are playing a lot of cantrips, decks like Storm. It's possible that if you played this, you exile their yard and you wanted to cast like a Serum Visions and a Sleight of Hand, you like drain their yard and you get like a couple cantrips out of it, but you're probably tapping out at that point. So like...
Yeah, I think like the most interesting way I can see this seeing play is as a sideboard card for Grixis control decks against Storm.
Yeah.
Where it's like you're playing counter magic to stop them so they fill their graveyard and then you get them by storming off on their turn. And that seems more of just like a really sweet way to beat Storm, not necessarily the best way.
And kind of Christmas landy. It's
You'll play Storm one day with Mnemonic Betrayal.
Yeah,
and then sometimes you'll get like other decks that are weird that are out there. But no, I think this is
it's fine. It's interesting to talk about, but like that's probably about it.
Next is Chance for Glory. I feel like this is a Ben Bateman card. Red, white, colorless, instant. Creatures you control gain indestructible. Take an extra turn after this one. And then at the beginning of that turn's end step, you lose the game.
Yeah, so Michael and I talked about this actually. Not on the show, but just like we talked about. This is like... So, okay, you have Final Fortune that's not legal in Modern. It's a 7th edition.
I believe this is
printing.
The first Final Fortune in Modern.
You have the version of Final Fortune that's a sorcery from Portal 3 Kingdoms that I can't think of the name of, but it's the same card.
Yep.
You have Glorious End, which is like an end of the turn.
It is kind of an extra turn card because you end your opponent's next turn. So, yeah.
So there's like some combination of these cards that now has existing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is yet another one. But the reason you lose the game is because you're getting that red extra battle card for 3, right?
Well, I mean, what you're getting is all of your creatures are indestructible forever, and you get an extra turn.
Oh, right. This is the one that's forever.
Yeah. So your creatures are indestructible for, like, if you play this and then you are able to
Sundial
or stifle the trigger with the, like, 5 different stifle variants that exist, like Trickbind, or you have a Gideon out, the 3-mana Gideon, or you have anything that makes it so you do not lose the game, Platinum Angel, your creatures are now all indestructible forever, and you get an extra turn.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think, I mean, that was the thing Michael and I talked about with Gideon. Like, Gideon is a more and more interesting effect. I mean, from the perspective of like what you're specking to be useful, if any of this stuff was reserve list, I'd be buying it because like they continue to make Sundial of the Infinite and Gideon effects more and more relevant.
Well, like, but like with now Chance of Glory and Sudden End or Sudden Betrayal.
Which one?
The one that ends the turn.
Glorious End.
Glorious End. With these two cards, you can play all 8 of these and some packs and play a Gideon and 4 Sundial. So, like, you can have now 8 ways to survive these, and now there's enough reasons to survive them that there's some really sweet stuff I think you can do.
I don't know that this card does anything for you in that deck because, like, getting an extra turn out of it.
You do get an extra turn.
This card?
It says indestructible and you get an extra turn.
This card?
Yeah.
No, you get an extra attack step.
No. Take an extra turn after this one.
Got it. I was mistaken.
Creatures you control gain indestructible forever. You get to take an extra turn. Next. And then at the beginning of your next turn's end step, you lose the game.
Yeah, okay. So that's fair. So pretty much that whole, like... I mean, I had my packed Delver deck that I was playing for a minute.
Yes.
That it was interesting and fun. It wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. It won some games, but like... I was playing a bunch of Pact of the Titans and Pact of Negations and Delvers, and I wasn't playing Sundial, but I had Gideons in there. And it was interesting. You could get people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you don't do the Delver game, but if you play this, Pact of the Titan, Gideons, possibly Blue Pact, Pact of Negation, like just to have it, and like you just kind of try and get there with these effects. And you could do stuff like have Geist, where Geist gets to keep the Angel at end of turn if you have Sundial in there. So you have different ways to kind of take advantage of it. There's a lot of power level here.
The coolest thing that I found playing the Pact deck was having Snapcaster Mage in a deck with Pacts was really, really fun.
Yeah.
So if I had Gideon in play and I had the emblem, my ability to Snapcaster and hit like Pact of Negation
mm-hmm.
and just like it was such a good feeling. Or going like turn one, Pact of the Titan and then being able to like turn two, flash it back with a Snapcaster Mage and have like 10 power at the end of your second turn,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you're holding like Angel's Grace or whatever.
Sure.
Like that was really fun.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, like, and yeah, you play Angel's Grace. So I think there's also plays where it's like, I have Gideon, I untap, I play something, a 2-drop, and then for 2 mana, I can pact 2 of your spells and play Pact of the Titans and just like get a bunch of power on board, stop you from doing everything, have a Snapcaster Mage and a Gideon, and that puts you really behind. And now you can then, on the next turn, cast Chance of Glory, where you get 2 turns of attack steps. All your things are indestructible. I think there is more and more pieces are coming out for that deck to do something relevant. All right. Next card, Doom Whisperer, black, 3, flying trample, pay 2 life, surveil 2, 6/6.
This card's nuts. This card's so good.
I don't know yet what it's doing, because the one thing to realize is you cannot pay life you don't have. So you can't, like, you know, Gideon, and right. then Pay Life you don't have. Michael made sure I said that on the cast.
My first thought when I saw this card again was not actually modern. It was actually for Highlander because it's like, like it's just a 5/6, it's a 6/6 flying trample for 5 that sure. does really broken things. And then I started thinking about just like it's outside of Highlander, like rate, like actual rate on this, mm-hmm. and like. You pay two. You like will take a downside on a card to get a 6/6 flying trample for 4. That's mm-hmm. a thing people have done. Desecration Demon, yeah. Abyssal Persecutor, right? At 5, the same thing with a I can fill my graveyard by like 10 cards to paying life in a black deck that can play like Tassiger and Angler is like right. kind of nuts.
Well, like even if you're say you're at 6 mana, and which is a lot of mana for modern, like this is a dream world. But the fact that you can get this many cards into your graveyard and then have a mana left over. There are at least 4 different ways I can think of just winning the game on the spot that way.
I mean, like, play this with, what's it called? Play this with Heartless Summoning, and you're in business, man. Right, right. Turn 2 Heartless Summoning, turn 3 this guy, good luck.
Yep.
You know, none of the removal spells in Modern kill this. Path's the only one.
Mm-hmm.
That and the other card we're going to talk about at some point on this show, but yep. like, Path is the literal only played spell that
Terminate
kills.
That, there are things that kill it, but yeah, just they're expensive and or...
This might be a really good target for Heartless Summoning, actually. This could be a really good
yeah.
one.
I think there's a lot of things that this card does well.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Oh, my God. This and Havengul Lich in the Heartless Summoning deck.
Havengul Lich is back.
You love that card.
I do love that card. I had a sweet standard deck with that card. Him and Glissa. Assassin's Trophy, black, green. Destroy target permanent and opponent controls. It control or may search their library for a basic landlocked card. Wow, I didn't say that correctly. Destroy target permanent in opponent controls. A controller may search their library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle their library. It's instant, it's blue black, and everyone knows that this is the best card in the set.
You still kind of struggled there in the beginning. You tripped up your words a second time.
It's fine. I think people get it. They know what it is. This is Assassin's Trophy. I think the biggest thing I regret about this card is that everyone's calling it Ass Trophy, and then we're just going to get a lot of people assing cards, and it's just meh.
Ass Trophy?
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that. That's funny.
Yeah, that's the internet. Welcome yeah. to it.
Welcome to the internet.
Yep.
This card's really powerful. I know we've talked a lot about it already. It's like...
Here's the deal, though. If I'm a Tron player and I'm going to the next modern tournament, I want to play Tron more because this card exists, not less. Because this card isn't good enough to make green-black a good matchup against Tron. It gives green-black a better chance against Tron, and it makes it instead of a 90-10% win rate, it's like a 70-30, but you're still 70% against green-black. Like,
people are forgetting that you're spending a card, and sure, you take out their tower, but you're getting a wastes out of your deck. So they're trading a card for you to not miss a land drop. So maybe you've spent
a
card to try to...
You don't get a land up. They get a basic land.
So maybe, just maybe, you've spent your Sylvan Scrying, or you spent your Expedition Map, or your Stirrings. You spent a card to get you there. But Stirring cycles, mm-hmm. and you don't really care about those other cards. The deck is resilient. It's built to spend those things and be Ghost Quartered. Like, it doesn't care.
Right, and now this green-black deck has spent their entire turn to doing nothing but, like... making it so it takes an extra turn for you to get to the card you need. And it's not like it's getting rid of every one of the towers in your deck. So you just need to get another tower if you guess the wrong one. They have... And then, you know, it's the whole Blood Moon thing where generally when I'm a Tron player and my opponent plays Blood Moon, I'm like, sure, you just took a 3-mana turn to delay me for 2 turns. But in that time, I'm still going to play my 6 drop on time because you're not putting pressure on me. This doesn't put pressure on someone. Now, in a blue-black-green Delver-style deck where this is keeping them off of their mana maybe to get there, maybe, but Delver's bad, so yeah.
I do think this card has interesting applications that we didn't talk about in a Hate Bears deck with Arbiter.
Sure.
Because...
Oh, no, I think this is still a really good removal spell. I still play this over Abrupt Decay in the same way that I play Thoughtseize over Inquisition of Kozilek. Because it still kills Planeswalkers. It still kills other... Like, this can kill a Colonnade. This can kill 5 drops. Like, it's better 90% of the time. This is Path to Exile, but on blue, black, green, and can kill anything.
It's not sweet that in that Hate Bears deck, you have to play 3 colors now because your fetches get worse. So that's
correct.
Not sweet. But I definitely think that there's a thing there with Ghost Quarters, this, Path, Arbiter, and, like, some other stuff. Like, you could probably... And those Eldrazi and Taxes deck take really good advantage of that. Mm-hmm. And maybe the third color makes those decks not work. But another thing that gives somebody an opportunity to search for a basic as their benefit is a strong play.
Yeah. No. I think this card is obviously very, very, very good. My point is more that it's not as good against Tron as people want it to be.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Speaking of cards that are good, that is the second best card in the set, I think, unless we see something else. Knight of the Autumn, green, white, colorless.
You're adding a the right there.
Knight of Autumn. Oh, okay, fine. I add those wherever I want. The master.
I'm aware of that.
Creature Dryad Knight. When Knight of Autumn enters the battlefield, choose one. Put +1/+1 counters on Knight of Autumn. Destroy target artifact or enchantment. You gain 4 life. It's a 2/1. Do you think this card puts Dryad Tribal over the top and makes it a playable archetype?
We had that conversation when you weren't here. We all acknowledge the Dryad Tribal's a thing.
Wait, really?
No, definitely not.
There's like 4 really good one drops.
Look on your face. You were really excited.
Arbor, Dryad Arbor is a card. So you have 0 cost Dryads.
So you can get your land bolted.
You can fetch for a 2/2 because you can play the 2/1 that gives counters or tribal. If we get a 2-mana Dryad Lord, I think it's a thing. Get ready.
You do it.
Dryad Tribal.
If you make Dryads work before I make Rogues work, I owe you another dinner.
We will make those decks and play each other. Dryad Tribal will destroy Rogue Tribal.
That's not even close to true. You know,
there's like six. There's like 6 good 1/1 Dryads for one.
The Rogues deck is a close deck. It's a real.
It's not.
Silhanna Ledgewalker and Invisible Stalker are both Rogues, so you already have a deck archetype.
Neither of those 2 cards are good.
Ever heard of a card called Hidden Strings? Anyone?
Like, the 3 cards I've named so far are all like actual tournament playable cards and have been since Modern existed.
I can play either of those cards. Play a Hidden Strings. Hit you. Untap my lands.
What is Hidden Strings?
That's the Cipher card I like so much. It's gonna be really good.
This hurts me inside.
The one thing we didn't talk about this card is how sick the art is. It's like super, super dope. Yeah, it's like
Ryan Pankos did like a really, really good job. You can actually, it's currently, I think, for auction on Facebook. We share the tweet out. If you go to our Twitter, you can find it to find it. It's good.
It's like super dope. The Kelp Horse, the Kelp Steed.
Yep. I don't think it's Kelp. I like looked closer to it now that it wasn't blown up in our really, really low resolution copy that we get for our preview. It's like vines.
I'll take a bush steed.
You'll keep up with Kelp.
Kelp
doesn't even make sense. I'm the one that said it, but I have been dissuaded. The other thing here is something we didn't talk about is what's the +1/+1 counter enchantment that's like now a thing?
+1/+1 counter enchantment that's now a thing.
Hardened Scales.
There you go.
Card's good with Hardened Scales. It's not part of a cycle though. Come on. Where's our night cycle?
I want
Night of Summer. Fine. I want Night of Spring. I want Night of Winter.
It's fine with Hardened Scales. It's just a 5/4 instead of a 4/3. Like,
no, don't you put 4 counters on it?
No, it's Hardened Scales doesn't double. It's +1.
Oh, +1. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's totally fine. Sure. It's just like Hardened Scales is bonkers in a deck that's able to like consistently change its counters around.
We have another Hardened Scale card we can talk about later. All right, next. This card's really good and actually could be one of the best cards in this set. Time will tell. Mausoleum Secrets, black colorless. Okay. It's an instant. It has undergrowth, and you search your library for a black card with converted mana cost less than or equal to the number of creature cards in your graveyard and put it into your hand. Then shuffle your library. So for 2 mana at instant speed, you can tutor for any black card.
I mean, you have creatures in your graveyard. Yeah, one thing that I thought was interesting about this deck, or this card, and I think I can't remember who I talked this with, does this card make a modern Shadowborn Apostle deck a possibility? Because, like, it's so easy to just go, like, Apostle, 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 sack them, get a giant demon, and then, like, have this card. And just, like, now your whole yard is just full of creatures. You can get any card in your deck.
At that point, it feels win more. I feel like this is more interesting to me in something out of, like, one of the collected company Amira.
That just is
going to
fill its graveyard anyway.
Yeah, like something that was like a Birthing Pod deck at one point where you're tutoring for black combo pieces. You can find your one of Persist Goblin. Red Cap. Murderous Red Cap.
Okay.
You can find Vrissar Seer. That's 2 of the 3 pieces needed for that combo. You can find, there's just a bunch of stuff you can find for better black cards that are good and combo pieces in decks that I think that's more relevant to me.
Fair.
And that deck has a bunch of creatures to put in its graveyard. Like, I think that's where this could shine.
Cool. So
So do we want to do one last card before we go to part two next week?
Yeah, well, I think actually what we'll do, because this is, I think we're probably at like 37 minutes for part one.
Michael, what time are we at?
And I'd like this to be 40. Yeah, and with a little bit of setup, I think that actually it'd be nice to have a little more on part one. So we're going to record part two tomorrow, but yep. Michael, who is our guest producer, is going to sit in my seat for the final 10 or 15 minutes of this half.
You're leaving me?
I need to.
You're leaving?
I literally, this is going to go up.
You're like the lawyer from Jurassic Park. You're going to go to the bathroom, there's going to be a T-Rex. I'm Tim and the girl in the car. It's going to eat me too.
Is he Jeff Goldblum?
Yeah. No. He's the other guy.
The other guy. Sam Neill?
Sam Neill. He's Sam Neill.
He's the hero?
Yeah. He's going to be like, that's not what I'm going to do when I'm like, he left us.
He knows
us.
All about raptors?
Yeah.
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 That movie's
Michael,
pretty...
how would a raptor kill me?
That scene's great.
That's so good.
Yeah. One of my favorites.
Michael's just not having it.
On the spot.
It, and then... across the belly,
yeah.
Across the side.
I think that movie is legitimately perfect. It's when I watched it again recently for the show. Like, I came away from just being like, "This is just like legitimate brilliance."
Yeah.
Everything about it,
like every scene. It's my favorite movie of all time. I don't know if we've said that on the cast.
I think
but
we probably have. Yeah.
It like Star Wars as a concept is a big deal, but Jurassic Park I think is a perfect movie.
It was kind of a shame we didn't have you on the show for that one. That feels like a miss.
One tier.
This is your favorite movie of all time.
And that is going to wrap us up for part one of the Masters of Modern Guilds of Ravnica set review. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please subscribe to us on YouTube here. It is the most helpful, supportive thing you can possibly be doing for the show alongside the Patreon. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show, and stay tuned. Be back next week for part two, our Guilds of Ravnica set review. We have a lot of cool stuff coming up, including some more top 10 lists and a Brew Factor episode where we're going to take our favorite cards from guilds and be doing brews with the listeners and users of the Patreon, submitted decks by patrons, patreon.com/themcast if you want to submit a deck. All right, guys, thanks for listening. We'll be back same time, same place next week.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to themcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.